police photographing our license plate.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. I have two guests, actually three, but we're going to start off with two today. One is the new president of the Jefferson Area Tea Party. His name is Mike Bazile. Mike, how are you today?
Doing great, Marcello. Thanks again for having us on.
Oh, my pleasure. And also, I'm meeting today Rod Gentry. Rod is very active, to put it mildly, with the economic development in the not only in the city of Charlottesville, but in the county in which Charlottesville is located, and that's Albemarle County, Virginia. How are you, Rod? And welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio.
Marcello, thank you very much for having me. I'm doing just great today. Thank you.
Fantastic. Now, I get from your bios, gentlemen, that both of you are very interested. You know, we always say all politics is local. And I've just recently, as a news producer, reported on a story about Albemarle County and Greene County have the lowest unemployment rate in the area, and that both Albemarle County and Charlottesville, Virginia, are the fastest growing in terms of population. So with that sort of as a backdrop, why don't we start with you, Rod? You are involved with the Albemarle County Economic Planning?
I sit as a member of the Economic Development Authority, and, you know, as a business person, and you probably have been most active through the Chamber of Commerce in recent years, have had a real interest in economic development and what we've chosen to call really economic vitality in the region. So that is what really has driven my interest, is that it is essential, I believe, and many others believe as well, it is essential to secure a future that we are able to provide for our children and children's children in terms of jobs and opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think anyone would argue with that. I guess the gray area comes in how we accomplish that, and what are our priorities in accomplishing that. Where does the Tea Party stand on this, Mike?
Well, in general, the Tea Party is for free markets. Let the people decide. Let the people who take risks owning businesses and starting businesses, let them decide how best to run their businesses and how best to expand and employ people in the workforce. That's in general, that's the general Tea Party position. Some of the stuff that I think that we're looking at as a community is, yeah, we've got the fastest growing population, but I think in general here in Charlottesville, our population grows. We've got a lot of folks moving in town for high-paying jobs, high-paying specialized skilled jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the county raising taxes, which really, it actually puts a big hurt on the lower income families. So some of my friends have, you know, multiple jobs, two or three jobs and incomes coming into their families,
mm-hmm.
and they're just barely getting by. So the folks that are in the apartments, renting apartments, you know, I think they're being hurt the most, and they're the ones that are going to get pushed out. So it's kind of it's an interesting demographic change because, you know, we've got a lot of people moving in, we've got a lot of money coming in, and the government from the state and the federal level, they pump a lot of money into this area through salaries and grants and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That money doesn't filter down to the lower income side, and so the lower income folks really do. They take it the hardest, and they're the ones that have to move out of the area. So that's kind of like a fact of life. But is that really the way that our government wants to grow the area? I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. What companies, Rod, are coming in, and do they? I don't know. You know, you want companies to come in. I mean, that if they create jobs, not, you know, a lot of big corporations have not been creating jobs lately. But the mid-sized companies and small companies are coming into our area. Who are they, and what sort of impact do they have on us, Rod?
Well, at this point, without really going through a list of them, there is a company that has recently come here into the Orange community that will provide 200 to 300 jobs, which is a manufacturer, and they have not opened their doors yet. But they spoke recently at a meeting of the annual meeting of the Central Virginia Economic Development Partnership. And, you know, I think one of the things, and kind of ties into what Mike was just saying, that becomes more and more important and more evident, you know, other than the growth that we've seen through government jobs in this area, some very high-value jobs, is the need to focus on the most valuable resource we've got in this region, which is our people, and look at what kind of special workforce efforts we need to take. And so we have a very active workforce community that both in the city and the county, and actually the Piedmont Workforce Network, which is based here in Charlottesville, which I currently chair, covers a 10 county market all the way up through Fauquier, and focuses on what employers need and what people need. So if we've got an individual who's underemployed, for example, they can go and find out how to get a better job, or to get the training they need to get a job that they've identified that they want. Or an employer can come to the workforce group and say, I need 50 people with this skill set. And working with Piedmont Virginia Community College and the University of Virginia and some other entities, we're able to meet that need and customize some training. So, you know, it really becomes incumbent on our region, and government plays a part in this, but we as individual business people also play a role to identify the kinds of skills, the kinds of jobs, and the things that we need to do, and then be proactive to make sure that when that employer with a specialized need, if he's a manufacturer and he needs a person with machinist skills, make sure we've got those people here so that we can provide that employment. So it really is, to me, it is a complex issue, but it involves regional partnership. It involves everybody communicating very clearly and then working to find a solution together. And it's not just government's role.
I gotcha. I hear you loud and clear on that one, especially after Mike's point that sometimes the more government gets involved, things just don't work out the way they may have had the best of intentions, but still. But I wasn't just taking advantage of a cliche that all politics is local. I really do believe that a uniter or a uniting factor for all Americans, and certainly in Virginia, is if we see that people want to work, and they, in difficult times when they have to double up on the job, it becomes a challenge. And so, Rod, I wonder if you could tell us even a physical address, but certainly a website of this organization that you chair that is a service for people who are looking for training and employers who are looking for people who have the training.
Certainly. It's the Piedmont Workforce Network, and they're physically located on Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, Virginia. There's a workforce center in what used to be the MBAR building there. And let me see if I can give you an address. It is 2211 Hydraulic Road, Suite 104, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22902. And a direct line to the Central Virginia Economic Development Partnership, the executive director of that, also acts as our fiscal agent. And she is in that building. Her name is Helen Cauthen, C-A-U-T-H-E-N. And Helen's direct line is 979
Excellent.
And, you know, so again, if we're really trying to create a multi-pronged approach to economic development, to job creation, to solving the problem of underemployment and working on unemployment, because at the same time we say this, there is probably more regional cooperation, just using Albemarle and Charlottesville as an example.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of that going on now than there has been in a long, long time. And I know the county and the city staff are working hard on that. And we put the city is putting the satellite workforce center downtown in Charlottesville, because there is a component of folks looking for work who don't get transportation. They can't get out of the city.
Yes.
We're going to them.
You know, this is excellent, and I think that was where I sort of lost my point, but that's where I was going with all politics of the local. So is the economics. If your neighbor and your neighborhood and your community and your municipality can't have a big presence in economic development and job creation, it's highly unlikely the federal government is going to be as effective. I'm not down on the federal government. I just think that you have to start as close to the people with the challenge as possible. I guess that's the point I'm making. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, that's certainly true. And, you know, locally, my gosh, our area is going to go through a lot of changes, Marcello.
Yes.
Especially when we start carrying Route 29. But I'm up here at the Forest Lake Shopping Center right now, you know, and they're putting in new condo, Rio's retail office space up here. They've got construction going on that.
Mm.
Out there in the cap where I live down south, they're putting in a bunch of new homes down there. I mean, there's a lot of growth going on. And then, of course, with the construction on 29 and the comprehensive plan that the county's been working on, you know, they're really going to shape the businesses that are targeted and focused on bringing into this area. And then again, the skill sets that are needed to fill those businesses. So we're going to see a lot of changes, and a lot of it seems to be directed by opaque processes that are going on in their local governments. We'd love to see a lot more community involvement into the comprehensive plan, for one thing, and the plan and the economic planning that the county is doing and the city is doing. Because there's a lot of people in the community that have great ideas and great understanding of what our local needs are that really don't seem to be getting their message across. So I really think our area needs to focus on a lot of community discussion,
mm-hmm.
Like going right now on this telephone call.
Yeah.
And Marcello, I would agree with what Mike just said, and I guess I would modify it just slightly, and because I think we all need to acknowledge one thing. And the county, for example, is getting ready to hire an economic development professional.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are one of the few places you'll go in Virginia that is as affluent as ours is, that has no full-time dedicated economic development staff.
Mm.
So we're getting ready to create that and to focus on exactly what Mike was just talking about. But one of the things that economic development professionals will tell you is the world they're in is once an industry is targeted, and let's just say that, you know, for example, Micro Air is here. Let's just say we were looking for a biotech firm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things the county said, we need more of those, and they provide great skill sets, jobs with great skill sets. So the economic development professional begins to cast about and look for that kind of opportunity. There's a period of time when you really can't have much discussion about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Once at a high level, it's been identified, because these companies, the process they go through to decide where they're going to be, it's very, very secretive. And, you know, only when they get to the end do we know what we've gotten. But the process leading into it can be very transparent. As, for example, here's a list of the kinds of industries we're looking for, and certainly the public would respond, mm-hmm. as they did when we talked about what do we got to do to put an economic development professional in place in Albemarle County, and the public had a lot of input on that. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, in general, whole concept of sharing these ideas and getting feedback, and you can never go wrong by communicating too much.
I agree with that, both the importance of communication, and I understand businesses have to hold the cards close to their chest while they make internal decisions on what's best and, you know, how it's all going to work out in the bottom line. I get that, but I hear what Mike is saying, and I appreciate your point of view too, Rod. Is one thing I've been meaning to ask economic developers, giving an example, since Mike was very specific in his example, a lot is going on Route 29, now the Western Bypass, well, the Western Bypass would have affected it too, but the Western Bypass has gone by the wayside, and now there is this the new comprehensive plan with overpasses, etc., and they're trying to figure that out. That's Route 29. But my question is about the development after it's here, although I do think the point I'm going to make is that this should happen before it gets here. What about, for instance, in Old Trail? Route 29 is an example at Hydraulic and the new shopping center there, and the new cinema and all that, but also Old Trail is an example. Still in Albemarle County, but a little west of Charlottesville, where they build these homes, or in the case of Hydraulic and 29, this nice commercial area of stores, all beautiful, wonderful, I love them, but we don't do anything about how traffic gets in and out of there. And I think particularly at Hydraulic and 29, that has been an issue. But out at Old Trail, you have all of these new homes and families moving in and the development, but the main road out there, 250, hasn't been touched. What about that? I mean, it seems to me you can't just bring in businesses and homes and families and not bring in schools and roadways. Anybody got thoughts?
Marcello, I don't see really the same problem with 250 that I see with 29. And of course, as there is more growth and continues to be commercial development that will support and create more residential growth, the road out there will become of greater concern. But right now you've got a major high school right in the area and elementary schools. And the county, I think, has a pretty good plan for what they're going to do with Crozet. And it may have suffered a few fits and starts. Right now, probably the greatest issue we're faced with, and the thing that the business community is worried the most about, is back on 29 in the area Mike was talking about, but specifically the grade separated interchange at Rio Road and the impact or potential impact that could have on business. And as that moves forward, what's that really going to do to any business, but particularly to the businesses that are struggling a bit right now?
Yes.
If it chokes access, and again, the same thing would apply to 250 when the time comes, is, how does a business survive during a period of tremendous economic disruption?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. If I want to jump in there, Bob Famick was talking about the disruption to businesses due to the McIntyre Parkway.
Yes.
Going on currently. And, and we've got experience locally currently of business impact, the impact of business on because of the roadway construction, major roadway construction. So we know it's definitely going to impact the businesses that are here. And then with the Rio 29 interchange, I think there's a lot of people that believe that interchange itself does not have to happen. We do not have to have the grade separated interchange there, which makes it kind of curious.
Mm-hmm.
Because we haven't seen we really haven't seen any validation of reason of why we need to be so disruptive to the businesses that will be impacted by construction at that intersection, at this time, through that intersection construction. And so that would be something that we really do need to see in the public, to gain trust and gain an understanding of what the county's intent is with developing this 29 corridor here.
Yes.
And it really goes beyond the county, because I think the county is proactively looking at what can we do to help and support businesses during this period. But it seems to be more of an issue created by VDOT and created by the governor's office. I don't know what tail to pin that on.
Yes.
But I think it's, what the business community's been asking for is of VDOT is let's do an economic impact study to see what this realistically is really going to do
Yes.
You know, let's look at those things in light of what it will do, because truly the 29 North Corridor is the goose that laid the golden egg.
Absolutely.
Trump's tax dollars.
Absolutely. I'm afraid we'll have to take a break now, gentlemen. Stay with us. We're going to be right back after a brief break with at least one of my guests, and we're adding another. So stay with us. This is Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and don't get me started on VDOT. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. There are so many movies about grief. Film, at its best, is about the human condition. Grief is an intense part of life's journey, and there is none greater than the sudden, abrupt loss of a child. Rabbit Hole is just such a story. 8 months ago, 4-year-old Danny ran in front of a car. His parents, played by Nicole Kidman and Aaron Eckhart, are now finding their way forward. As a first step, they have individually drawn inside themselves to seal their emotional wounds. But to truly heal, they must begin to emerge from their viscous emptiness to go on with life. Tentative steps? Try to regain intimacy. Try to gain understanding through group therapy. Try to forgive. Based on his own play of the same name, David Lindsay of Bear has written a fine set-piece film which intimately observes the process of grief. Yet it also finds humor in the most unexpected of places. For instance, when someone offers the sincere but commonly trite, "God needed another little angel, so he brought him home," Nicole's character explodes with the anger we would all feel. So why didn't he just make another one? He is God, after all. Funny. Right? Rabbit Hole. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando. We have joining the new Jefferson area president of the Tea Party. We're joined by Peter Cerfaratti. How do you like that said, Peter?
Well, when they came to America, they started calling it Cerfaratti. If we were in Italy, it would be Cerfaratti.
Cerfaratti. Yeah. Okay. We'll
Marcello.
Exactly. I you know, tears my heart out. You know, Mike won't let me pronounce his last name correctly either. But facile. But it's okay. Anyway, welcome to the show, Peter. We have had already an amazing conversation with Rod Gentry and Mike Basile about local economic development, and we know you have a lot to say about that and know a lot about that.
Tell us about yourself a bit before we get started.
Well, I was born in upstate New York 60-odd years ago. My Italian family, big family, I have 4 siblings and a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles, and it's really wonderful. And went to high school, college on the East Coast, and in 74, I moved to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I lived in California, Southern California, Northern California, for about 33 years. And then in 2005, my wife and I moved back to the East Coast, and we moved to Charlottesville. So I've worked as a real estate agent. I've been in the mortgage business for over 20 years.
So why don't we start with you, Peter, and what are some of the positives versus the negatives of local economic development?
Well, I see economic development as being the creation of value-added activities. In other words, creating goods and services that have value to the public, mm-hmm. society, for which they're willing to pay. Mm. And there is a free exchange of goods, services, and or money to pay for those things. And that's what causes an economy to grow, is money changing hands, the velocity of the money, the number of times it changes hands, the more economy happens. And frankly, if it's profitable, the more taxes the government collects, more people get involved, and it leads to a productive society, people that are productive, people who are using their creativity and their energy and their time to satisfy the needs and desires of their fellow people, and it leads to independence, intellectual independence, time independence, economic independence, and I see all those things as being good results, positive results.
Uh-huh. And the negative?
Well, I don't really know what the negative... I don't really know that there are any negatives involved, except when people do things that are illegal or immoral
mm-hmm.
or violate societal mm-hmm. codes of behavior in the way they treat one another.
Yes.
And that's where the government should come in, is enforcing contracts and enforcing legal righteous activity as, you know, defined by society.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah, I don't really mean, I can't think of anything that, I can't think of any negative results from an overarching standpoint. Now, I can see where if someone opens up a winery and then runs a winery and then people build houses next to it and the people living in the houses start complaining about hearing trucks at 4 o'clock in the morning or mm-hmm. 6 o'clock in the morning, whatever. Okay, that can be construed to be a negative. Now, the question is that a negative that should be mitigated by putting the business out of business? Or is that a negative that should be people should learn to adapt to because of the overall benefits to society? Or is there some other way to mitigate that or deal with it? So, most of the time I see negatives. Most of the negatives I see are people who are unethical in their dealings with other people. And that's where the negative comes from. But, of course, you find that in every society. If it's a barter society, capitalist, communist, socialist, whatever. All you got to do is read books about how the Soviet Union ran the Gulag Archipelago, and you see that immoral, illegal, destructive behavior
mm-hmm.
can happen in any kind of economic system.
Mike,
and I would say that, some of the folks who complain about economic development, I think they're just using a term to pin a complaint on, and I don't really know what their complaint might be specifically, but I know some of the folks that I've talked to in the country have said, well, we don't want any more people, and we don't want any more buildings going up in Albemarle. We just love the countryside so much. There's those folks who complain about the economic development, but what they fail to see is that no matter what, the population grows, and we need places to put people, and we need jobs and economy and cash flow mm-hmm. to pay for just any of the general services and goods that those folks want. So it's not a bad thing. It's a necessary thing. And then the other thing that people might complain about is a bad thing about economic development. Again, a term that they just apply to pin something and a complaint to, well, is pollution, making a mess, not cleaning things up. I don't know where that comes from, Marcello. I think all of us in our generation have grown up with the concept of clean up after yourselves, make the place better than it was before. Now, this is our backyard. We live here.
Yes.
So we're not making a mess here. We're not going to let our neighbors just come in and start dumping stuff in the streams. There's a mindset that thinks that business is pollution, and I think that's a mindset that was developed back maybe in the 60s and the 50s and the 40s and previously that we've been addressing all along and cleaning things up.
Well, we won't get into coal ash, but tell me about how does this impact...
That's what I was talking about is being immoral or illegal activity.
Okay.
It's not part of economic development. That's not part of value-added activity business.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of managing how you do your business
mm-hmm.
in a way that's detrimental to others, and that should not be accepted.
Very good.
Like I say, that happens. I mean, I'm sure that if you go to China, and they have a market-based socialism there, I suppose you could call it, and that's mm-hmm. one of the most polluted places on earth. So
yes, well, that's true.
Capitalism.
That's true.
That's a matter of how people deal with each other and the lack of accountability or the amount of accountability there is to each other. I don't see that has anything to do with economic development itself.
I got you.
It has to do with management of economic development or business activity.
Well, how does, as Rod Gentry likes to refer to it, economic vitality impacting on the businesses on Route 29, especially near Rio Road and Hydraulic Road?
Well, I can't really speak to that because I'm not personally involved in that, so I really don't know. I think that you could take a look at, in a smaller scale, the effect on business where the bypass is being extended down on McIntyre, where it's
yes.
up to Harris Street.
Yes.
There's a small 50 to 60 business businesses are in that little commercial area.
Yes.
And they're being dramatically impacted in the level of their business. So I would imagine that you could sort of extrapolate that situation to a larger scale in Albemarle County. I don't know how they're going to, I mean, personally, when you have a business that's on a major thoroughfare where people they can't walk, they can't really bike, can't hardly take a bus. They're used to taking their cars. If you can't get into the businesses that you have been frequenting because there's no road access or it's really becomes a pain in the neck, then people are going to go elsewhere. I mean, that's human nature. You have to factor that in.
Mike, jump in on that.
Yeah, well, that's part of what Rod Gentry wanted to bring out. Also, the tax base from the businesses there at 29 is going to decrease. So Albemarle County will experience a decrease in their tax revenues once construction at 29 at Rio takes place. And so, they've got to figure out ways to make up for that shortfall. Maybe they've already got some ideas. I don't know. But typically, it tends to lead to more frustration and more calls for potential tax rates or tax hikes again. That's probably a poor way of managing it. The other side of what Rob was talking about, well, Rio at 29, again, there's a lot of people who believe that that does not have to occur in order to fix the traffic problems on 29. So it would be nice to continue to look at that rather than just say, well, we already decided and we're not going to look at it anymore. What Rob was talking about was if we want Albemarle County to be healthy and continue to be healthy, then we have to develop the business base for the community. It has to continue to grow. We have to continue to increase the amount of money that comes into our area for goods and services and production on top of just the government jobs that are here. And that way, we'll continue to have more money coming in to cover a growing population, cover inflation, and to cover all the new things that come about over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Yes, we certainly are growing in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. And growth, I'm all for growth. I just would like to see us be responsible and balanced. I guess that's the word I'm looking for.
Well, let me ask, Marcello, what have you seen in our area that's been irresponsible? I'm kind of curious.
Well, actually, there are a couple of things. We sort of ended our last segment without really going into much about VDOT. We danced around it, but I think the Western Bypass survey, a VDOT survey, whether it was a question of just ignoring the obvious or VDOT saw its responsibility as here we did the survey, here it is to the county supervisors, and you guys need to look at it so we won't be running into or through any historical sites, and yet that didn't happen. And an awful lot of money was spent getting ready for or planning the Western Bypass. Now, I didn't have a horse in that race, so that's not my point, but my point is, as I made in the last segment too, Peter, I'll make it again since you weren't with us then, there is a building of tremendous homes in Crozet and Old Trail area, and of course, because of that, the traffic on 250, which is only one lane each way, as opposed to 29, has increased, but nobody seems to be addressing that, and I think that's not responsible. I think if you're going to build more, you want to invite businesses that help the community prosper and that raise the tax base for the county, and then the county and the city, are able to raise the living standards, perhaps, of the people living here. But at the same time, the construction, the building of it, the development of it, if you will, I think has to be balanced. And that's my point. I don't always see a balance. And again, an example on Route 29, as I mentioned in the last segment, that whole new shopping area at Hydraulic, the name escapes me now, but...
Stonefield.
Yeah, yes, yes. That, I mean, get the stores up, get the customers in, I get it, I do. But all of a sudden, a intersection which we all know already has its challenges, had this whole new entrance and exit that just sort of got ignored until there were enough complaints about it that they stuck in an exit that many people used to cross the 3-4 lanes of 29 there to make a left turn from southbound 29 to get onto Hydraulic. I mean, it's like I look at that and I go, what are they thinking here? And it seems to me there's a lot of expedience, whether it's immoral or not.
I'm not really sure that, I think we're mixing things up here. I'm not really sure that building businesses and developing that mall and bringing in new businesses and new shopping and creating jobs, and that is economic development because you have new businesses. And so there is an element of economic development, but what we're talking about is the missteps by the organizations that are tasked with managing the infrastructure, the public mm-hmm. infrastructure.
Yes.
And so I think that maybe we need to look at not say that shouldn't, that was a misstep or that was inappropriate development, but it's like planning of the infrastructure that would service it.
Yes.
Was incompetent or incomplete or not done properly. I really think that the traffic is obviously a negative aspect of economic development on that corner.
Yes.
No doubt about it. But as I say, that doesn't mean that the economic development shouldn't happen. Maybe there's too much traffic in there. Maybe the site is overdeveloped for its size and the number of businesses, but that should have been determined by the powers that be that grant the permits and who are supposed doing the planning that makes us everybody smile when they drive down the street to go shopping or to go someplace else. So to me, I just think that I don't know how things happen in the back rooms when planning people are making their plans.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I think this should be a cautionary tale when we talk about following the plan.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, we have a comprehensive plan, and we have to follow the plan. We can't deviate from the plan. Well, maybe the plan isn't that hot.
Exactly. I agree with you completely, Peter. All right. Tell me, Peter, I know I've expressed opinions about economic freedom and the opportunities, everyone sort of grabbing the opportunity of their personal economic freedom, and that moves everything forward. Can you elaborate on that?
It's, sure. Okay. Let me just say that my grandparents came from Italy.
Uh-huh.
Except for one. One of my grandmothers was born in the United States, but my family's from Italy.
Uh-huh.
And they were immigrants a couple generations ago.
Mm-hmm.
We had my father's side and my mother's side had two large families, 8 children each. None of those people in the family were on welfare. None of them were receiving food stamps. None mm-hmm. of them were unemployed. They were encouraged to work hard. They were taught by their parents to work hard, that that's how they get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was no welfare. There was no food stamps.
Yes.
They had to rely on themselves and on their community to prosper, and that's what they did. They found jobs. They went through the Depression. My father's family, my grandfather had a job at a chemical factory, and my grandmother took some of the kids, and she went to the fields during the summertime and harvested produce on truck farms in upstate New York to make money for the family so they could survive. And you know, they did little things on the side, but they were very industrious. And my family and the extended family of my father's aunts and uncles, they all owned their own homes. They all raised families. They all were productive. They all had jobs. They left, you know, they built up their financial wealth. They had their freedom. They owned their cars. They traveled. They raised their family. They educated their kids. And their kids are doing the same thing. And it's like, it's a beautiful system because we just rely on each other. We rely on our family. We relied on our neighbors. We relied on the people that we went to church with. And we prospered without the help of the government.
Hmm.
And I just don't see that same spirit is being fostered the way things are running today. When you have 50 million people or thereabouts on food stamps, and the people running this country say that's a good thing because it helps to stimulate the economy.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, but this is another situation. We have planning that is off the tracks. I think that when the government fosters an environment which allows people to think about what they can do, do what they like to do, be creative, create resources and goods and services that other people want, or just go to work for people who are doing that, I think people prosper. People, what happens is you have more people who are earning a living, supporting themselves, supporting their families. That means less people need to take tax money from other people that are working, which means that less people are dependent on the government, and they are actually creating their own lives and governing their own lives. That's what this country is supposed to be about. That's what it always has been about until, you know, relatively recently when we had social programs that are substituting, or they just allow people to ignore their own talents and energy and time and resources that they have and let them sort of exist without input from themselves. And you know, just take it from the production of other people. I see that as being very destructive.
All right, we're running out of time. I'm just wondering, Mike, if you could jump in and how you feel about that.
Yeah, well, another great thing about having the freedom to conduct your own business, to see something and take the initiative to generate some money for it in order to help out a neighbor, to do a service or produce something for your neighbor or for your community, local community, without having the government place a bunch of restrictions on you to do so that you have to jump through. It allows the families that need that additional income to have that additional income so that they can spend it, because they're going to go spend it, and they're going to help their neighbors out because they're going to go shop at their businesses, or they're going to shop at a business that employs them and provides more income into their own homes. Mm. The faster we can turn that money and generate economy, generate business, the faster we're going to help our neighbors in that respect. So that's a huge plus, being able to generate more income for your family as well as push that money back into your neighbors and your community's pockets so that they can do the same.
Fantastic.
It's a great thing that we can do without government.
All right, then, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure talking. I'm sorry we've run out of time. Peter, say your last name the way you like it pronounced for us.
Sefarati
and
Maserati.
Yeah, yes. And Mike Bazile, who is the new president of the Jefferson Area Tea Party. Thank you both, gentlemen, for being on the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio today. And we'll be talking soon, I'm sure. Take care.
Thanks for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us. There'll be more to come from the Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Particle Fever follows the steps of 6 out of the 10,000 scientists from 100 different countries working to launch the Large Hadron Collider. You remember the Collider Project, don't you? It's the 17-mile-long underground ring just outside Geneva. It's designed to send subatomic protons speeding in opposite directions until they smash into each other and release still smaller origins of matter. But in Particle Fever, you don't even need to know that much to be fascinated by this search for what makes up our universe and those who live in it. Various conflicting theories, problems, and setbacks sustain the suspense as brilliantly as a well-constructed thriller. And finally, the cameras were present for what is arguably the greatest discovery of all time, when the Higgs boson, the God particle, emerged from theory to solid fact. No matter how science-challenged you are, you will remain enthralled with this film, overwhelmed by both our human insignificance and the impressive power of our little minds to search for meaning. And you will be blown away by the suggestions of what remains to be discovered about multiverses, black holes, and dark matter. Will we find answers in the coming years, or will we find that there are none? Particle Fever. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, here with my pets and pet peeves, hoping you'll join me in a wake-up cup of coffee. What's the story with Pope Francis getting the trickle-down crowd all a-twitter? And what's this chorus of an increasing gap in economic income between the upper wealthy 1% and the rest of us? Wonder if there will ever be enough for some to sing our song. Wonder if, when they can't find the technically savvy worker bees among the undereducated and unemployed, will those on the top floor finally send down the spacious, burnished like mirrors bronze elevators to the ground floor? And, if not pass, at least offer to share the torch to a new generation of Americans? But for now, this is their story. Unlimited corporate expansion, adding millions more international subscriptions, prescriptions, and deceptions for untold herds who, ignoring the fine print in favor of 140 characters, miss that stories and songs are written and sung for those who build the walls higher, and not for the order takers below. Their story? Even if occasionally their number is temporarily interrupted by carolers harmoniously interjecting, "Lift every voice and sing, we shall overcome," there's no FDR or JFK to deliver Obama health care from the recurring corporate refrain. so disarmingly melodious with product placement. It confuses the very natural direction of nature with a melting iceberg serenade seducing even the animal kingdom with climate change. Alas, the very geese play follow the leader in Which Way Do We Go? This is their story. Justice for all who sing our song of silver bells and five gold rings ownership. From above in their city behind the walls, they conduct the desperate for bargains, violently pushing Black Friday and Cyber Monday profits, the army of shoppers occupying their malls beyond the walls. After the roar of the crowd greasing their palms, the dissonance in decrescendo returns to reprise their score. Now, what's your story? Singing in the rain of tears burned by the bush that burned your life savings? Flying by China's rules? Kneeling before an Iowa king? Will you settle for an Obama second chorus of a Truman's Do-Nothing Congress? Or shall we reach for the sky, key-changing our American story with songs that better accompany the lyrics of the Gettysburg Address, or Lincoln's second inaugural, and all of the Constitution of the United States of America and its proposed Equal Rights Amendment? They're playing our song, Frances J. Crosby, the All-American Girls Baseball Players, all the Riveting Rosies, Emma Lazarus, Alice Paul, Rosa Parks, Hillary Clinton, chapter and verse. So let us sing in grateful chorus as we expose Congress and dump the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Let us make a joyful noise for all in the land, for peace over war, and for health care instead of insurance industries' get-well cards.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and most of all, share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with your friends both on and offline. In response to your emails, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.